Welcome to Between the Lines, where we journey beyond the surface of Scripture with hosts David and Jonathan. Get ready to deepen your faith as we uncover the hidden gems of the Bible. Without further ado, here's our show.
Here with David and Jonathan on Between the Lines, WVFF 97.7. Glad you could be with us on Between the Lines, Understanding the Bible, where we go through slowly, methodically, and try to explain some of the things that are not in plain language, and some of the things that you have to take back to the original transcript, Hebrew and Greek, to get full understanding. And there are a lot of things in here you haven't heard in church because they just simply haven't read the book. Religion trains their preachers to preach what they want them to preach, but there's a lot of stuff in here that can make a whole lot of difference to your walk with God if you understand the Bible in its totality. For instance, there are this is the second time mankind has been on this earth, and if you read the Bible in its wholeness and understand, science and the Bible go hand in hand. Yes, those fossils are millions of years old, and yes, we've only been here this time 8,000 or 9,000 years. It's all true, and it all comes together, but Satan doesn't want that. He wants there to be doubt. And you got to trust the science, because the book is just not telling the way it is, but it actually is. The Bible tells it exactly the way it is. I dare you to go to episode 1 on WVFFradio.com, and I hope you listen along and follow along in your King James Bible. I don't tell you that's the only Bible you have to read. It's the most accurate English version there is. Follow along in episode 1. If you don't become a believer, then just leave it right there. But this basic things I want to fill in before we get started reading in 2 Kings today. The first covenant was not the Ten Commandments. God gave Abraham a covenant. Follow me with all your heart and circumcise your children. Well, his children, 4 generations later, decided they couldn't do that. And then they lived in Egypt for 400 years, and they came out of Egypt and just absolutely proved to God they couldn't do it. So he laid the law on them like a good father does. You don't do it the easy way, we're going to do it the hard way. The law was made to show them that there's nothing they could do to keep themselves holy. The only way to find themselves, their way back to him, was to follow him with their heart. And the entire theme of the Old Testament is about the heart. Hundreds of times it's spoken about. Not the mind. Not your religion. Religion does nothing for you. God hates religion. Religion is an act. Religion is a focus on objects. God wants you to follow him with your heart. He says, I place the spirit in the heart of man. The mind of man is contrary to the will of God, and the flesh is an abomination. It's up to the spirit man I place in the heart to gain control of this thing that it's living in, this flesh and this mind, and focus it on God. And I tell you, I'm an honest man most of the time. And I'll tell you, there's nothing harder than the spirit and the mind in conflict all the time. You know, even when you're having a good day, a little voice in your head, when a situation comes up where there is opportunity for worldly pleasure and lust, that little wheel in there starts turning, and the spirit man has to grab that wheel and just try to bring it back to true north. And if you're honest, you'll tell the same thing. It's an interesting, if not demanding, daily struggle, the spirit against the mind. So we are in Kings, and I want you to take away from Kings is excess in your life will bring either cursing or blessing. You know, You turn that excess on to God, following Him with all your heart. Look at the blessings pour in. You let that excess go the other direction. Watch how your life falls apart in every aspect and in every way. Paul says all things are good. All things are legal for the Christian. But not all things are good for the Christian. All things must be kept in moderation. You know, even things that can be devastating to the body and the personality, such as alcohol, can be enjoyed by Christians in moderation. The Bible does not forbid that. Only your religion forbidded that. It's not in here. It's in here many times. God tells you to drink. Have a good time. Various reasons. Various health benefits. But He says you're a fool to be a drunk. He says that several times. It's all about moderation. But I tell you, the biggest drug, and a lot of Christians are drug addicts. And I'm not talking about hard drugs. I'm talking about food. Food's biggest drug this body could ever ingest. You know, the right amount of food is perfect medicine. A little too much tends to put you to sleep, and it tends to put the spirit man asleep. A whole lot of excess of food. The spirit man has been put on autopilot. He's in the back room, tied up in a closet, and this flesh is just ruling the day, buddy. Pay attention. Push back from the table before you get your fill. And I tell you, 20 minutes later, you'll feel good. You'll feel fine. And I tell you, what you'll see is the spirit man, who is the true individual inside you, begin to take more dominance in your life. It'll even amaze you sometimes. Wow, this feels good. You know I'm doing what God wants me to do. I know I'm following Him. So there you have it, Christian. You look at all these drug addicts, crack addicts, and all this on the street, and you turn up your nose as you're walking by them. Well, hey, what? You packed on the pounds there. You're a bit of a drug addict yourself, because food is devastating to the spirit man. You give this flesh any pleasure more than it needs. You know, food is necessary. You know, having a good time is necessary for your personality and the wellness that you have inside you. But you exceed what it needs, and it just wants more and more and more. And the parts of your day that should be filled with God will begin to be filled with worldly pleasures, and you will find yourself on the outskirts of the holy city, and you want to be in the center, as close to the center as you can get. We're in chapter 5. I want you to look for excesses that these kings have dealt out, and the cursings and the blessings that come along with it. Chapter 5, book of 2 Kings. Now Naaman, captain of the host of the king of Syria, was a great man, his master and honorable, because by him the Lord had given deliverance unto Syria. He was also a mighty man of valor, but he was a leper. So he was a captain in the Syrian army, very, very decorated captain, but he was a leper. And had he been in the Israelite army, he wouldn't have been allowed to be in the army. Would have been an outcast. These people don't have the Levitical laws placed on them, which was for their own good. You don't want to keep a leper in the camp, because all of a sudden you'll have many lepers in the camp. God had reasons. And the Syrians had gone out by companies and had brought away captive out of the land of Israel a little maid, and she waited on Naaman's wife. She said unto her mistress, "Would God, my Lord, were with the prophet that is in Samaria, for he would recover him of his leprosy." You know, it's too bad that Naaman's not over there where the prophet of God is, because he could be healed. And one went in and told his Lord, saying, "Thus and thus said the maid that is of the land of Israel." And the king of Syria said, "Go and go, go to and go, and I will send a letter unto the king of Israel, And he departed and took with him 10 talents of silver, 6,000 pieces of gold, and 10 changes of raiment. So he's got it in his mind. He's going to go see this prophet and pay for his healing. Yeah. Going to go put a whole bunch of money in the offering plate and walk away with what he's asking for. How many times have you done that, Christian? You know, the offering plate comes around. You normally put your $20 in there, but car's broke down and you're really, really needing it fixed, or you want a new car, and oh man, I'm going to bless God with $50 this week because I really need that car.
Yeah, but ulterior motive.
Oh yes, right. Ulterior, yeah. There you go. And he brought the letter to the king of Israel, saying, "Now, when this letter is come unto thee, behold, I have therewith sent Naaman my servant to thee, that thou mayest recover him of his leprosy." So he sent a letter to the king also. It's like become a political thing too. You know, don't go to God in that fashion. God knows what you need. It came to pass, when the king of Israel had read the letter, that he rent his clothes and said, "Am I God to kill and to make alive, that this man doth send unto me to recover a man of his leprosy?" So he gets a little nervous. He's saying, "Oh no,
I'm on the spot.
This other king sent me a letter telling me that he sent his commander over there to the prophet, and I'm supposed to see that he gets healed. Oh no. What if he doesn't? Oh, we're doomed. He'll come against me and destroy me if this man doesn't get healed." Came to pass, when the king of Israel had read the letter, that he rent his clothes and said, "Am I God to kill and to make alive, that this man doth send unto me to recover a man of his leprosy? Wherefore, consider, I pray you, send how he seeketh a quarrel against me." Yes. This is a setup, Jonathan.
Yeah, he's looking for a reason.
He's setting me up. He knows nobody can be cured of leprosy. I mean, my great-great-grandfather used to talk about things like that in this nation years ago, but ain't nobody seen that in a long time. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're all following that golden calf around when it comes through town on the trailer. And it was so, when Elisha the man of God had heard that the king of Israel had rent his clothes, that he sent to the king, saying, "Wherefore hast thou rent thy clothes?" That was a sign of great mourning and upcoming destruction. So the king's sitting there, and his shirt is ripped open, and it goes through, the camel email goes out immediately unto all parts of the land. Something is really wrong. The king's shirt is ripped open.
Yep.
So the prophet comes and says, "Well, what's going on?" And the king saying, "Wherefore thou hast rent thy clothes? Let him come now to me, and he shall know that there is a prophet in Israel." So Naaman came with his horses and with his chariots and stood at the door of the house of Elisha. And Elisha sent a messenger unto him, saying, "Go and wash in Jordan 7 times. He didn't even personally see this man. This man is unclean. Not that he couldn't, with the power of God that he has. "Go and wash in the Jordan 7 times, and thy flesh shall come again to thee, and thou shalt be clean." Now, that seems pretty straightforward, right? Mm-hmm. You know, if you're an Israel, you'll know that 7 means things. This is an outsider, though. And he pretty much thinks this is poppycock.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
What? I came here to have this fancy religious ceremony, you know, people dancing around me and sprinkling me with stuff. And yeah, no, what? Mm-hmm. I could have done that when I was at the house there.
Yeah.
But Naaman was wroth and went away and said, "Behold, I thought he will surely come out to me." And see, this shows a little, he's a commander of men. Mm-hmm. So he's thinking, this man will come stand before me. I'm important. "He will surely come out and stand and stand and call on the name of the Lord his God and strike his hand over the place and recover the life. There's your ceremony there.
Yeah.
With the staff waving around and all.
He had an idea of a religious ceremony.
Yes. How many churches have you been in when there becomes a great carnival up in the front aisleway? I mean, I love Pentecostals. I was a Pentecostal for years. I was sitting near the back one day, and there was some new folks came in. They were sitting on the back row. And the carnival festivities broke out. Jumping around and flopping up and down and screaming and hollering. And I heard them people whispering, what is going on? We ain't never coming back here again. Scared them off. And, you know, and the pious religious Christian would say, oh, well, they're just afraid of the Spirit of God. God ran them out of there. No, yeah. You ran him out of there. God didn't run them out of there. Something that God put in them brought them in there. And he was probably praying it was a mild day.
Yeah.
That was the closest church he could get them to.
Right. He's like, you guys just don't get carried away today.
I am not saying that God cannot put the spirit of dance. David showed us that. And the spirit of song. I have been in Pentecostal churches all my life. And they have been lots of real stuff that I have seen. Mm-hmm. But for every real thing I've seen, 7 or 8 religious
put-ons.
Put-ons. Yeah. Yes. Just get full of themselves and want to just be a part of the festivities. Are not Albana and Pharpar rivers of Damascus better than all the waters of Israel? You know what? He says to his man there, he says, man, the rivers in Damascus are a lot cleaner than these rivers. Why would I do that? Dip myself in the muddy rivers of Israel and the Jordan. Aren't our waters better than of Israel? May I not wash in them and be clean? So he turned and went away in a rage. He's not going to do it.
Yeah.
This is foolishness. Yeah. And his servant came near and spake unto him and said, my father. And this is a very important lesson. If the prophet had bid thee to do some great thing, wouldst thou not have it done? How much rather then, when he saith to thee, wash and be clean. Mm-hmm. You know what? He could have asked you to climb to the top of Mount Everest. Get on your knees, wave your hands 17 times, build a fire, and then safely climb back down and you would be clean. And you would have done that. Because that was something grand as the stature that you have already. But he asked you to just simply go walk out to the Jordan, dip down 7 times. How simple is that? Why wouldn't you even attempt that? And the lesson here is God is no respecter of persons. You may be a wealthy Christian. You may be a Christian of great stature. God's not always going to ask you to do something grandiose. He's going to ask you to do something that he needs done. And something maybe that will humble the spirit inside you that's growing. You know? Walk over to that man laying in the street and talk with him for a minute and give him a couple dollars. I know it's beneath you. And God forbid you shake hands with him. It's filthy. But simplicity. Don't ever feel that something comes inside you to do. Don't ever feel it's beneath you. God might have put it in there. Then went he down and dipped himself 7 times in Jordan according to the saying of the man of God. And his flesh came again like unto the flesh of a little child. And he was clean. So, okay, I'll do it. Yeah, maybe you're right. I'll do it. It's no faith in God there. Mm-hmm. Faith in the action that he's doing. This was all written for you. It wasn't done for Naaman. It was all done so you could read this and get understanding out of it. The religious act does nothing for you. It's obedience. The only sin in this Bible is disobedience. You can call it murder. You can call it theft. You can call it whatever you want to call it. It's a disobedience to God. Verse 15, he returned to the man of God. He and all his company came and stood before him. And he said, behold, now I know that there is no God in all the earth, but in Israel. So, he's become a believer. How can I do this foolish thing, Jonathan? Just go dip myself in this dirty water. Okay, just, you know, master, go do it. You know, it sounds pretty beneath you. And he does it, and he says, wow. That was all it took? Mm-hmm. Because I obeyed?
And you followed the instruction.
There is no God on the earth but in Israel. But therefore I pray thee, take a blessing of thy servant. But I still want to pay for it. But he said, as the Lord liveth, before whom I stand, I will receive none. And he urged him to take it, but he refused. There we have a lesson coming up on greed in the church. And Naaman said, Shall there not then, I pray thee, be given to thy servant two mules, burden of earth? For thy servant will henceforth offer neither burnt offering nor sacrifice unto other gods, but unto the Lord. I'm a believer from here on out. I will offer to no other God but this God in Israel. In this thing the Lord pardon thy servant, that when my master goeth into the house of Rimmon to worship there, and he leaneth on my hand, and I bow myself in the house of Rimmon, when I bow down myself in the house of Rimmon, the Lord pardon thy servant in this thing. So, he's an absolute believer, but he knows he has problems ahead because he accompanies the king into the house of his false god, stands there, holds the staff, and the king holds his hand on the staff and bows down before the false god. And he knows that's his duty and he can't get out of it. So he's asking, please forgive me for this thing that I know I still have to do. And he said unto him, go in peace. So he departed from him a little way. And that go in peace says, yes, you're forgiven. Go through the actions. Don't allow your heart to become involved, you know. Is it necessary to intermingle with the heathen? Yes, absolutely. Oh, I'm not going to hang around heathens. If you don't hang around heathens, they'll never learn the way to God. You got to shine the light. There has to be something in your life that daily just pops out at people. And I'm not talking quoting scriptures to people. That's the biggest turnoff ever was. Just in your attitude, the way you handle yourself. Wow. There's something about that guy, something about that woman. So happy and caring, you know? Then you foster a relationship. You go a little deeper. You're paving the way to God through the observance of you. Now, there are plenty of Christians out there that, you know, you could have the best church membership, never missed, gold star on the board up there, and nobody you work with even knows that you anything to do with God. Just one of the guys. And he said unto him, go in peace. So he departed from him a little way. But Gehazi, had dollar signs in his eyes, the servant of Elisha, the man of God. said, "Behold, my master has spared Naaman, the Syrian, in not receiving at his hands that which he brought. But as the Lord liveth, I will run after him and take somewhat of him." I'm going to let him leave, get a little ways down there, and then I'm going to sneak off. Go tell him, "Yeah, we changed our mind. We want some of that money that you were going to pay for this healing." So Gehazi followed after Naaman, and when Naaman saw him running after him, he lighted down from the chariot to meet him and said, "Is all well?" And he said, "All is well. My master has sent me," lying through his teeth, saying, "Behold, even now there be come to me from Mount Ephraim two young men of the sons of prophets. Give them, I pray thee, a talent of silver and two changes of garment." Naaman said, "Be content, take two talents." And he urged him and bound two talents of silver in two bags with two changes of garment and laid them upon two of his servants, and they bare them before him. Now he could have come and said, you know, all that money. I mean, he was carrying a whole lot more than that. You know, that's like $5,000. He was carrying probably $150,000, $200,000. You go back and tally it up. But he just wants a little bit. You know, how many of us sometimes think it's okay just to pull a little bit from the side when it's not quite such a righteous thing to do?
We'll be back with more spiritual insights on Between the Lines after a brief message from our sponsors. Stay tuned.